If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Badass Women's Hour Extra Bits, our little gift for you podcast subscribers. This week, we are talking to one of the UK's leading drag queens. Tom Rasmussen explains exactly what it's like growing up as a wannabe drag queen in the north of England and how he came to create Crystal.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
One, two, three, four!
Now, our next guest has written a book that when it landed on our desk, I was just beyond excited already by the cover. Tom Rasmussen is drag queen and author of Diary of a Drag Queen, and his Instagram is the brilliant at Tom Glitter. Tom, welcome to Badass Women's Hour XL.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, for anyone that has not spent the last few months binging RuPaul's Drag Race on Netflix, what do we mean when we say drag queen?
Well,
what's the official definition?
Oh my goodness. I should know. Well, I guess technically a drag queen is perhaps a performer and someone who dresses in women's clothes or explores like female signifiers.
Yeah.
That would be a drag queen. So sort of, yeah, I would say most probably performs on stage perhaps. But I think you can be a drag queen in your bedroom. I was for like 12 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, when do you know that there is this drag queen waiting to like come out? Because I feel like whenever I see drag queens, they just look like these sort of badass alter egos.
Oh my goodness. Well, I don't know. I think I was a drag queen before I knew what a drag queen was. Mm-hmm. So I sort of was, I don't know, 9 when my mum caught me in a dress lip syncing to Celine Dion, and I wasn't really like aware of what that meant. And then I think basically at university when I learned what drag meant, I was like, oh, that's me. Because I think I'd always wanted to basically perform and, you know, get some attention, but not really actually. It becomes about far more than that over time, I think, if, you know, if that makes sense.
And how do you go from like thinking, oh, I'm possibly a drag queen, I'm enjoying this, dressing up, I'm enjoying the singing, to actually doing like your first performance? Do you remember your first performance?
Oh my goodness. I mean, I've been performing my whole life. Who isn't? And also gender's a performance, let's be real. For me, it was about meeting people. I think that's the way to do it. You know, if you're wondering about getting into drag, you know, I think people might first of all focus on aesthetic, but I would say the most important thing is like, get out, go and see your local drag queens, you know, go to the night, support the night, speak to people, become kind of a known face, and then hopefully you'll get invited onto stage. I started university with 4 friends who sort of, we all sort of formed a drag troupe together, and that's, you know, and it was dry there. And so people turned out, they were like gagging for it. You know, you had sort of rugby lads in dresses and sort of like, you know, super, super girly girls in suits. And I think it really, you know, I think everyone has a little bit of it inside them, really, mm-hmm. to sort of want to mess
Where
around.
Did you go to university?
I went to Cambridge.
But you're Lancashire-born.
Lancashire-born, yeah. I went to, hardcore state school, but yeah, then went to Cambridge. I'm Lancashire-born, yes.
Okay.
Cambridge wasn't very drag-friendly until we arrived.
Really. Is it still drag-friendly? Did you create a whole drag scene there?
I think there's still a really cool, there's a cool drag troupe going on now called Drag Time. So yeah, maybe, I mean, no, I don't want to claim like we dragged Cambridge. It doesn't deserve that. It's yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it was funny. It's a very dry place, and it's also not very northerner friendly either, which was a funny thing for me. Mm-hmm. So I ended up sort of accidentally losing my accent, and I go home and everyone be like, you're so bloody posh now. And, oh no, sorry, I shouldn't say the B word. Yeah, it was a funny one. Anyway, but no, I think maybe there's a bit of a drag scene happening. And I think it was around a time as well where drag was happening more, or maybe like more people were becoming aware that, you know, there was lots to be talking about and working through with gender, you know, the rise of fourth wave feminism and things like that.
But do you think people make the connection between drag and gender? So if I think of drag queens growing up, it's Dame Edna. Mm. On television, and then
Lily Savage.
And but again, who was northern?
Lily Savage.
Yeah. So you know, it actually growing up, it was normal, right? On television.
Right. Did you just think growing up drag was a northern thing?
Yeah, I've just made that connection. Yeah, or basically not southern, because Dame Edna also had an accent.
She's Aussie, isn't she?
Yeah, so yeah, making a connection between drag and having an accent. Yeah. So actually, you know, how did you go on sort of a journey of saying this is something that I can do and I can live it, and now you've got a book talking about it?
I mean, it was hard, like, to be honest. I mean, it's also drag. I always say this thing a lot, which I've been saying way too much recently. But, you know, drag and being a sort of gender nonconforming, if you will, not really being a man. Mm. And especially back, you know, back home in Lancaster, which.
Yeah, to Lancaster, you.
No, you didn't. Yeah, home in Lancaster. It, you know, being, first of all, gay, but also really feminine, mm-hmm. wasn't really the most, like, celebrated thing.
You has to work the doors of the Litton Tree.
I didn't. I'm obsessed. Yeah. Oh god, the Litton Tree.
Yeah.
Shout out all those nights.
Should we just leave you two to it?
Oh my gosh.
Lancaster's a wonderful place. Dear to my heart. But yes, I can't thinking about it, you know, I can't imagine walking down Penny Street in drag, or even talking about gender, about gender in a way other than, you know, men are blokey,
and girls are girly girls.
Exactly.
And I was always like a girly girl, you know, and the question was like, when did I guess, how did I get here, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think it was all secret for a while. And then it really was about meeting people. And, you know, my parents are a really good example of when I first came out as just simply gay when I was 13, which is really young, because I had no other option. I was very evidently gay. They found it really hard, again, because of kind of maybe where I were from. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, my mum who is amazing, but she'd never met a gay person before in her whole life, because why would she have, I guess, that I hadn't. Mm-hmm. I saw it on TV and was like, oh no, that's me. Oh gosh. Anyway, so then I came out and she wasn't very necessarily good with it. And then over time, oh gosh, where am I going with this? But over time, basically, the more and more drag I did, the more and more I was brought out by other people who were doing it too. So first of all, at uni, really, I met people who were exploring gender and wearing dresses and being on stage and performing drag. And I sort of, you know, to see that, to see yourself, that's when you're like, oh, that's me. I want to do that too. So you do that together. Mm-hmm. And through that, you know, I don't know why I brought my parents up. Through that, you know, it's also like not just me that's sort of become a drag fan and someone who's knowledgeable of drag, like my parents and my whole family are like really engaged in the culture now and like come to all the shows. And I'm going up to Lancaster and doing a show in April, and like loads at the Story Institute.
Okay.
Which is nice. We tried to get the Jukes, but it was booked. And basically it's this thing of like, I don't know, it's amazing to see friends that when I first came out were pretty homophobic, mm-hmm. not gonna lie. I mean, I was pretty homophobic. I used to say all the things like, you know, that's gay and stuff at school, awful mm-hmm. stuff. You know, now be like desperate to be front row at the drag show, and like mm-hmm. how that culture's changed and expanded and people. But I always think, you know, you gotta know one in a way. You mm-hmm. gotta know a drag, you know, and it just shows in my parents. I don't know, that didn't really answer the question, but I think it's interesting.
No, it did. That journey is important, because it's not, other than the Dame Ednas or Lily Savages of this world, you didn't know, but you did know.
Right.
Because it was always there.
Right.
But, and then as you move around and then going to Cambridge and you start having conversations and you realize there's this person that you are and you can be not just in your head,
and
out there in the world. And that's the bit that for me is just a wonderful journey.
It is. It was a It has been a wonderful journey. It's also been like paved with scary stuff as well. Like I've been attacked so many times, really badly once in East London and things like that. So, you know, while there's, a, you know, while I'm here on the radio and I've written a book about it, like, well, I'm here on the radio, you know, it's still not necessarily the, like, the easiest journey in a way. And I still, like, do not go out in drag. As in, if I get a gig booked, I'm like, I can't do it unless I, which sounds so diva, and it's not about being diva, because I'm not, but it's like, I still get an Uber booked, hopefully for me, and I can't, because I, last time I was out on the street in drag, which was 2 years ago, I got hospitalized. So it's that thing of like, I know, so I'm really bringing it there. But like, you know, the journey is amazing and it's the best journey I've ever been on. And the thing that back then with my parents when I was 13 that used to cause me a lot of pain is now like the most amazing thing in my life. But like, that doesn't come with its, like, without its sort of hiccups and problems. And you can read all about it in the book. It's all in there.
Do you think, you talked about drag as a kind of performance of gender. And I find this fascinating, what we define as gender and what makes somebody male or female or non-conforming. Do you think actually by, because drag also, it's a gender extreme, you know, it takes the best and the worst of both sides and really sort of pinches them and shows them off in a beautiful way. But do you think actually by having that conversation more, we're hopefully creating a world where we can say it, like, all gender is a performance, really. We're just living up to some stereotypes. Is that what it's allowing us to do?
Yeah, well, I always say I think good drag, whether drag king, drag queen, or sort of drag performer, whether, you know, not necessarily tethered to a gender, I think good drag should be, like, not just exploiting the signifiers of a gender. It shouldn't just be like, I'm a sexy lady, and, like, you know, look at me. It should be, like, thoughtful and questioning, and then I think if drag is like that, so not necessarily what you always see on RuPaul. What you'll see in the clubs in East London and what you'll see on stage at the Soho Theatre and what you'll see at Ducky at the RVT, all amazing places in London and also in the bars in, you know, up north where I'm from and things like that. I think in those, they're the conversations that allow the conversation about gender to be expanded and questioned, because a lot of drag performance is just about questioning binary systems, right? So, yeah, basically I agree with what you were saying.
So you... say now, the pronoun you like to use is they, correct?
They, yeah.
How did you come to that decision?
Well, it's this kind of the exact same thing as drag. It was all just like a domino effect. And I think I have, you know, I've never really felt like a man. And then I sort of, you know, dressed up a lot as in very feminine sort of signifiers. And again, I sort of explored maybe being female and it didn't really sit right all the time. And then after a while, I sort of discovered this thing that was they and non-binary. And then I was like, oh, that really fits. Because, you know, being a man, I never fit into it. And also masculinity was always kind of mean to me. Like, I got a lot of men being quite horrible to me. I'm sure we've all felt that. But, like, you know, so I was just, I guess, in a way, it was partially wanting to distance myself from men. Although, like, you know, some men are great.
we hashtag not all men, but a lot of them.
Yeah. I don't know. Hashtag most men.
Hey, I love other men.
Yeah. I can't, can I say the, yeah. You know, I love men sexually, but not socially. And that's what I always say. But I think it just sort of eventually arose. And that was about learning the language. I think if I'd have known that when I was 13, I would have been a they. I would have been non-binary.
Can I... And so I'm going to go on a journey of trying to explain this out. Reading they... so
on the sheet.
On the sheet. It jars me grammatically.
Right.
And so I had a flicker of, if it jars me grammatically, I can see how that, for me personally and others, how it then, when I'm thinking about gender, how it takes my brain a long time to get over it, because I've been programmed in such a way that this is how things are constructed, whether it's a sentence or behaviours. But it's only reading it that I was like, that doesn't fit.
Makes sense, yeah.
And I can see how that doesn't fit for lots of other people translates into, that does not fit, you know, whatever that fit is. But reading it on paper was the first time I was like, oh, I see my prejudice there. But it is, yeah, it starts from a grammatic, like the sentence to me feels doesn't
compute. Yeah, it's funny what you just said, how you took the route of being like, oh, it's funny, you read they, and then you were like, oh, look how we've been constructed to not to be programmed to just think he, she. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that, I think, if you go down that pathway, you'll get to the right answer, or you'll get to the kindest answer, ultimately. Mm-hmm. But I think if you go down that doesn't compute route. I mean, you know, it took me a while. I get my pronoun wrong the whole time, you know, and like a lot of my friends are non-binary and I'm always like, oh, wrong one. But, you know, and, you know, I guess we have that sort of like code between us where we can. But I think it's just always about thinking, you know, when it feels hard, it's about respecting someone. And, you know, I always say that my grandma, bless her, she passed away in December. She was the best ever. She kind of taught me to be gay, but she didn't know it, but she did. Like, she learned to use an iPhone. She was 88. She learned to use an iPhone. Yeah. So I'm like, you can learn to use an iPhone. Yeah. You never had that when you were growing up. You can learn to use a pronoun.
Yes.
You can learn to, you know, just, yeah, it's just not that hard, yeah, actually. And once you start to think about it that way, actually, then I now basically call most people they, mm-hmm, obviously unless they specify otherwise, and just sort of if I haven't met someone I'll say they, so mm-hmm, kind of just falls in quite nicely, and mm-hmm, it helps. It's mm-hmm nice.
Tom, if somebody comes to see you in as Crystal, what should they expect?
Well, I sing, ooh, really high. I've got a really high falsetto. And one time in Edinburgh last year, this guy came up to me and was like, I think I saw you close the BBC Proms last year. You're a fantastic counter tenor. And I was like, yes, that was me. Thank you very much. So yeah, I'm a singer. I sing songs, and then like comedy, and then I'm doing a solo show around the book in March at the Soho Theatre, and then it's going to Edinburgh, I think. And it's like readings from the book. It's called The Bible Too, the show, and basically, yeah, it's this idea that I've heard about this guy called Jesus. He's got 12 followers. What is that? And like, I wrote this book and it's way better, basically. And so it's like kind of in chapters, and they're called like Genesis-y and Quirinthians and things like that. So,
amazing.
That's, yeah, great. Sorry, when is this at the Soho Theatre?
March the 18th. March. There's only like 4 tickets left, so get them.
Oh, get quick. Okay. And Tom, if people want to follow you so they can add to your follow account, where can they find you?
You can find me at Tom Glitter on Instagram and Twitter. But, you know, that was a name I chose when I was 16. And now I wish I could be more serious, but I can't change it.
Oh, gosh.
I love it. Do go follow the fabulous at Tom Glitter. Tom, thank you so much for coming in and chatting to us all about life as a drag queen.
And it's a real honour to be on Badass Women's Hour, honestly. Oh, thank you for welcoming me into the
studio. Thanks for coming. Loved it.
Oh, and read the book. It's in all good waters. All good books.
Well, we've got it. I love the cover. I'm in love with that cover.
Yeah. I've had some great messages, and it's a bit filthy, so, you know. Not for the kids.
Maybe don't give it to your grandmother. Give her an iPhone first. Let her work that one out. And then
she can download the Kindle version
of
it. Yeah. On the iPhone. Perfect. 1, 2, 3, 4.
This has been the Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell, and Emma Sexton. If you want to hear more from us, you can come follow us on social media at Badass Women's Hour, HR, or leave us a review and tell us how much you love us. We really need to feel the love. 5 stars should do it.